Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Craft of the Draft podcast. Very special episode and one that's been in the making for a long time. We're joined by Dylan Alexander, and I feel like if you listen to our podcast, you would have heard Dill's stuff, but some people might not know. You're going to be surprised if they don't by now, but we've chatted for a long time now. We've caught up with you when we saw you again. You're doing, starting up your draft stuff. Absolutely loved it. But we're going to introduce you and let the audience get to know you a little bit. But firstly, how are you? Tell us about how you're feeling at this point of year, you know, the pointy end of draft things, and how are you feeling in general?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me on, guys. It's good to catch up again. We did a couple of videos earlier in the year and we've sort of stayed in touch and been at the game. So we've kind of rode the journey together a little bit, haven't we? But this time of year, I don't know, it's getting to that point where you've really got to start making the decisions. I don't know if you guys are finding that. You're doing these like top 20s, top 30s, top 50s and that sort of thing. And it's getting nervous. You get that pressure on you because you want to get everything right, do your research and everything. But I guess that's why we're here, while we're sitting down today, to kind of test each other, have a look at what our sort of rankings look like and go from there.
Certainly are. Well, this is the beginning of a few videos we're going to record today, and they'll be out on our channel and Dill's channel pretty much in the lead up to the draft. I'll ask one question, I'll bounce to you, but I guess give us a bit of your background, you know, tell us where you started. And obviously this wasn't your first thing you've come and done. You've obviously had a lot of time to think about, you know, before you came to this, and why this scene? Because it's been great to see you come in and really smash it.
Yeah. I guess it was sort of a stage of my life where it was a bit of a crisis time, in the sense that I had to kind of reinvent myself. I was living overseas, like teaching and kind of just doing that sort of thing, like enjoying myself over there. I came back after the COVID period, and I've always been a football fan, so it's something that I've always been interested in but never sort of worked in. And I wanted to get into sort of the media area, get into podcasting and that sort of thing. So I guess there was just a little bit of a, when I looked at the draft, there was maybe a little bit of a disconnect there for me between the draft content and maybe the club fans. And there was a little area there that you could sort of tap into. And just kind of got into it, started making content, and here we are.
What's sort of the focus of your content? What have been the ideas that have driven what you've done this year? Because you've obviously come onto the scene and you've released some really compelling content across the last 6 months since you've started covering it.
Yeah, like I think to begin with, really, it was just trying to learn about the draft and just doing everything that I could to like consume other people's content, consume content from different sports that, you know, sports that cover drafts and that sort of thing, to see what works, and even just to learn about the AFL draft, because it's not like I was, you know, deep into that before. I had an eye on it, and that's about it, really. So it was to kind of get myself reasonably knowledgeable so that I could make that sort of content. And then, with the study side of thing, kind of apply some of the techniques that I could to try to diversify it a little bit.
No, definitely. There is a great, probably, like you said, there is that disconnect. And I feel like it's getting covered more and more every year, but it doesn't have that traditional following that perhaps some of the American sports do. So it's good to cover it. And we've each done a top 60 this year, which has delved into the players that could be the next generation of stars. And that's going to be the focus of this episode, the players that we've put in the top 60s, and we've all got slightly differing opinions. So we'll delve into some of those discussion points and look at who some of the most AFL ready talent is as well. Nathan, if you want to kick us off with some questions that you might have.
Yeah, well, I'll start. I think it's a question for both of you generally, where you have Sid Draper. So Dill's got him at two. I think it's two.
Three.
You've got him at three. Jonty's got him at 11. So I guess this round table discussion of where we see Sid Draper, why so low, why so high. I think I had him pretty much in the middle of you two, around five or six. So.
Probably the consensus, five or six.
So yeah. I guess, why do you see him so high? Why do you see him so low? And obviously our rankings aren't saying they are 11th. They are the 11th best player. It's just dependent on a few things, and that's what we want to go through and why we have certain players above a blow. I'll let you start, Dylan, on why you have him up there.
Yeah, so you'll probably notice a bit of a theme with my top end selections, that I place a pretty high value on those sort of unique athletic types that I also see as being comparable in a football IQ sense, and their skills and you know, how they handle the ball in and around the stoppages. If we're talking midfielders here, as Sid Draper is, in that top end, I just think he has, yeah, a combination of that explosive speed. Though for me, those types of players are able to break the game open more easily. If you compare him to someone like a Jagger Smith, for example, obviously accumulates the football. He's one of the best players at getting his hands on the ball, but he's not necessarily someone that can go direct, like through the traffic, break the game open, get the ball in quickly to the forwards so you can, you know, ultimately score. He's got that. The reason that he's three and maybe not any higher than that on the list is I don't think he has the extra sort of maybe forward craft of some of those other guys that we're going to talk about in a minute. You know, your Finno Sullivans, your Sam Lawler types. But he does have that. He's got the ability to accumulate. He's done it at SA NFL level, at senior level. He's been able to really impose himself on that level, show a bit of his defensive pressure as well. His tackle numbers are a lot higher at that level than they are at under 18 level. So that's something I think that's transferable to the AFL. That explosive burst of pace. I still remember back to that contest. I think it was the SA versus Vic Metro game, and he had a big contest with Smiley. And yeah, I just think that was really like a compelling moment for him and what he can do from a contested point of view. And then he's got all those explosive attributes to go with that.
And then from my point of view, and we'll talk about our philosophies throughout the video as well, I think there was a greater tendency on me to look away from players who are midfielders exclusively or have a little bit of a vanilla aspect to them. And although I think that, like you said, he has got that really good athletic base, which is so important in the modern game, there's a little bit of him where around stoppages, he's so strong and he's really good. He's able to feed it and he's able to burst away. Like you said, he doesn't have the versatility of some of the others. And I just question his game-breaking ability a little bit to some degree as well, whether he does have that absolute top end that the rest of the upper echelon have. I talked about in our podcast last week the fact that I see there being 11 players that are right in that upper echelon. He's still in it for me, but he's just towards the lower end. And the other thing that I look at is I think there is going to be some players taken in the top 10 naturally that are key position players, even though it is such a midfielder heavy draft. So it does mean that one of those highly regarded midfielders is going to drop a little bit, and for me that just happened to be Sid Draper because of those reasons.
What for you, what are the biggest deal breakers with him?
For me, like I said, it probably comes down to the versatility. He's a plug and play midfielder clearly, but early in his senior career, how much is he going to impact? I know he's obviously had the experience at SA NFL level, like you said, and he's looked really good there, and I think the sort of player he becomes doesn't come across to me as having as high a ceiling as some of the others.
It's funny you say that because I've been having a few discussions with Carlton fans because they're all very hot on Sid Draper at the moment. One of the arguments that they've sort of used with me is that he's a forward half player. Yep. And I actually agree with you on this, even though I do have him as high as three for those attributes. I agree with you on the sense that he's a plug and play midfielder. Yep. He's not someone that, although, like, he's going to be, like, he's dangerous at ground level. I don't see him as, like, by foot, a clinical player.
Yep.
I see him as a guy that is going to get you out of that midfield in the, you know, the quickest, most direct way possible.
Yep.
And that's sort of, that's his A game, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think defensively, and that's the thing that, I guess, puts a little bit of a negative connotation on his name, is in transition, he loses his opponent quite a bit, especially fast-paced. He's not there to make up the ground as quickly as possible, but I think that offensive flair is still quite prominent with him. The goals he does score are very burst into forward 50. I think he understands forward craft to the extent of, in quick transition, how can I be there to get it further and deeper, whereas he's not a very inside 50, let's wait and see type of player. So I guess that's what you get with him. But
probably have to move on from him. We could probably speak about him all day, but there's a lot of players that we want to get
through.
I thought
this podcast was about him.
Yeah. Josh Smiley, I put at number one, and he's one who probably entered the season, would you say, his favourite for that number one pick in a very even field? Yep. I think that's a strong argument, and he's probably fallen out of vogue a little bit. He's seen as in that, maybe that tier B of the top echelon of players in a lot of people's minds. But for me, he one thing that hasn't been talked enough about with him is the narrative around the fact that he was playing through a bit of soreness this year, the fact there was a little bit of injuries and he was able to navigate those challenges. His AFL Academy games were still really strong, so we've seen that he's able to match it against senior bodies. Unfortunately, he didn't get that senior game at VFL level. I think that would have been really interesting to see. But I think the question marks over him, he's answered at different points of the year. He hasn't put it all together in a consistent block of form like perhaps you'd want him to do. But I look at what he's able to do at stoppage. He's so strong and he's so powerful. He's got that mix of size, speed and power that I don't think anyone's got in the modern game. And probably Sam Lawler is the one that's really comparable. He's obviously got a little bit of extra size to Lawler, but he's also been a little bit more durable through the year as well. And he can impact in the forward half. He's quite good one-on-one, explosive on a lead, and he can hit the scoreboard both from the midfield and the forward line. I think he's that perfect modern footballer. And I think he's getting a little bit lost because some others have made some more compelling cases and there's some varying list needs for different clubs. But I think on talent, he is the one that projects most well for me.
Yeah, and I think if you're looking at anyone that's that tall to begin with, yep. like that's sort of just a tick. Yep. Like straight away, yep. you can put that player into your midfield as a big body, someone that can, you know, block the ball. They've got really good reach to be able to get their hands on the ball first. My issue with Smiley is, like you talked about there, like the power
mm-hmm.
and the explosive ability. I don't see that with him in the same way as I see it with a Sam Lawler,
yep.
Who's yeah not as tall, obviously. Like he's probably pushing like 10 centimetres under someone like a Josh Smiley, but he's got the extra bit of speed. Like we saw, I was pretty impressed with Josh Smiley's combine. Like what did he do for the 20? About a 3 point.
He was very like, so his combine, yeah, his combine 20 meter was comparable to Patrick Cripps and Marcus Bontempelli at the same age. So you talk about athletic, that's a massive tick as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably like, I think the thing with Smiley, he's got strength. I wouldn't say like he's explosive in that burst to get out for me, which puts him down a little bit. And I think, I probably worry a little bit about those big-bodied mids playing at under 18 level, although we did see him, you know, for some parts in the academy games. Yep. I still think when you go back to those academy games, like a lot of the footy that he won was when he like glided across halfback, yep. for example.
Yeah, he played a lot in defence.
Yep. And he uses the ball really well. Like I'd sort of see him as a little bit of like a David Mundy type big-bodied midfielder.
Yep.
Like uses the ball really well.
Yep.
Has that, like absolutely has that strength. So he can get first hands on the ball from contest, but there is a little bit of a like a question mark about how he uses his size when he's in the forward 50. You mentioned the leading,
yep.
which is really good, but he doesn't really play a contested game.
Yeah. So would you back him to come out the front of stoppage?
No.
Yeah, and I would. So that's probably the big difference.
Yeah, yeah. I sort of more see him as someone that can block space,
yeah.
get his hands on the ball and facilitate.
Yeah. yeah.
He's been a pretty good kick most of the year as well for a yep. midfielder. I've found at times he's been
yeah,
one
he's a good
of the
user.
cleaner ball users out there. You know, the other thing, and I think we kind of got lost on this, we did talk about this in the middle of the year, was his kind of efforts at times.
Yeah,
we've
intensity.
Always questioned the intensity. I think that's kind of been lost given the season's been off for a while. But is that something, you know, recruiters take into consideration?
Yeah,
I'm not sure, because, you know, he might have just had this mindset that he's going to naturally go number one. But I think as soon as that kind of turned, he had to turn it back on again. So he's a very interesting one and an interesting case. We'll keep moving forward. And I have to bring up this discussion because we had an argument before and it's on Ollie Hannaford. And
yep.
oh.
we keep talking about this, right? Because, you know, and I say I'm his biggest supporter. And I'll still say it. You're like, you can't be his biggest supporter if you have him where you have him. But in terms of what he's produced, he's always been consistent. He's always worked his way up. He's never given up. I had him at 41. You two had him as high as 20. And it's just and really the discussion is, where does he truly sit? Because I question Jonty in the fact that he had Ollie Hannaford above Jesse Dettoli, Isaac Kakko,
yep.
Christian Moraes, Harrison Oliver, players who I think at the next level would be that much better, just in terms of the versatility they provide. And I just think Ollie Hannaford, people tend to ignore that he was very much just kind of ticking along for the first hot part of the year and he turned it on late. And I yeah. understand those big performances make a big difference. And he'll get drafted. He's done a fantastic job. But at the next level? Is he really in 5 years' time? I don't think he's in that top 20 discussion.
That's so interesting you think that. Yeah, because I look at it and I say his year turned the minute he went forward, and that's where I see him playing at the next level. So he was playing off halfback, playing quite nicely, showing those attributes at times. Obviously, you've been high on his effort. His effort and intensity is unquestioned. And as soon as he went forward, he showed, I think, across the back half of the year that almost unquestionably he's the best pressure forward in the draft. And that defensive side of the game is something that can get lost at Coates League level when you want to show your weapons. His off the ball work is absolutely terrific. I think he's someone who's going to come in and make a real impact at senior level. Coaches are going to love him because he's going to absorb the information and he's going to be really willing to buy into the game plan, and he's going to get his due rewards off the back of that. He's got really sneakily natural athletic profile as well that I don't think we talk enough about. He's really quick and has a nose for goals. So I think when you look at him, he isn't that far behind your Joe Berry types, your Tash Hottons, who are seen as the best small forwards in the class.
Yeah, and he's real, like, he has that efficiency.
Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't look as nice as some of those guys, like, with ball in hand. But he's got that, like, natural efficiency. You mentioned the athleticism. I think his agility was, you know, top five, top 10 in that sort of area too. So, and you talk about the modern game, you talk about those players. We just talked about Smiley coming out the front, getting it in quickly, and then the ball hitting the ground. He's going to be there. I think you do make, like, an interesting case, like a bit of a compelling case around the recency bias.
Yeah.
Because of what he was doing at the start of the season. Like, he wasn't someone really even on my radar in the national championships.
No, he had a poor national championships and by admission. Yeah.
And that's the other point I bring up, that against the best in the country, his impact wasn't felt that much. And obviously, you know, you wonder if he had this form taken into the national championships, if you got a different story. But, you know, you got to be fair. We criticise so many players for having poor championships. So, you have to take into account somewhat. How does that stack up? So
you do wonder, though, sometimes with the national championships, it can be a little bit of luck in the sense that you get the position that you want.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, obviously, they had...
Coming into the national championships with form is a big thing as well.
100%, 100%. And you look at players from, you know, didn't even play in the national championship, someone like a Garcia we've talked about before, and what he's doing at AFL level is that sort of, you know, quick, agile, small forward midfielder. I just think if you went back 10 years, I reckon we're having a different conversation. Like, he's more down the ranks, Ollie Hannaford.
Yep.
But the importance of that pressure and small forwards, I think it just knocks him up a bit.
Yeah, no, definitely. His GWV Rebels teammate, Nathan Sam Lawler, you had as outside the top 10 when we did our video a couple of weeks ago with our top 60. Check that out, and check out Dylan's top 60 as well if you want some detailed reasons. I think, Dylan, you've released yours in segments. We released ours as a full video. But having Sam Lawler outside the top 10, and there's some people who would say he should go as high as one. Dylan might be one of those people that has him at one.
Rankings wise, I've got him at two, but if we go to the mock draft later, bit of a spoiler there, maybe.
Yeah. Big body midfielder, obviously, from GWV, but injury interrupted. Why have you got him that low?
Well, that last point is my reason. Look, I thought I justified it enough, and, you know, you'd had people saying Laura at 12 is ridiculous. Well, yeah, it is, because he's not going to go pick 12. He's not, as I tried to say, I don't think he'll go pick 12. I just think, with that hamstring injury, you're taking on a massive risk there. And we discussed that the type of player he is, you're probably just going to have to live with that he'll have those type of injuries. But would I, you know, if you're a club who's got a top five pick for the first time in a while, like a Richmond, do I want a player that will play for me half the season every year or not? You know, that's been really dramatic there. But you're just taking on a player who has... those type of injuries can really hurt you. And we talked about Jason Horne-Francis. I guess clubs can take the risk that they can fix those type of things. And it's load management as well. When you get to the senior level, it's going to be even harder for him in terms of training standards and things like that. So I just wonder, will he be able to adapt? That's why I have him that low. I do think he's a top five talent, but just based off that, I think you have to take that into consideration. The players I have above him, I mean, Harvey Langford, for a kind of comparison type of that really big-bodied, can go forward. Well, Harvey hasn't had those type of interruptions. He's been able to put together a full season and show he can handle the load management throughout the year.
Just take yourself to, like, you're in your PE days and the team's up against the wall and, like, you're picking players.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you two are there, you're the coaches, you've got to pick the players. Yeah. Do you really want to leave Sam Lawler? And I know we're not mock drafting here. Yeah. We're ranking players, and it's a risk thing. But we're about to go out and have a kickabout. Yeah. Do you want Sam Lawler on your team?
I don't want to be tackled by Sam Lawler, so he's coming on my team. Yeah.
No, he is. It is a really difficult one. I do think he still goes in the top five. It's just a massive risk, I think. You've really got to be careful.
Yeah. The only thing I would say about the injuries, like when you've talked about Langford, like it's that speed type, isn't it? It's like that muscle fiber composition, fast twitch stuff. It's like Harvey Langford, what did he do, a 3.25, 20 meter?
Yeah, and speed isn't a strength. We've talked about that.
Yeah, and you look at those players that are more that type of player, Jagger Smith, Levi Ashcroft, they're not going to get injured as much.
Yep.
Like it's just, so it does come into the conversation for sure, I think, but just the upside.
Yeah, the upside's too great. I think you take the risk with the injury, and I think that's why I've got him a bit higher as well. We'll go through a few of the players in the middle end of the draft, and then we'll talk about some players that are AFL ready. Xavier Lindsay's the first one where I've got a bit of discrepancy here. I've got him at 12. I think Nathan's got him at 11 or 12 as well. Dylan, you've got him down at 24. I'll just allow you to justify before I defend Xavier Lindsay.
Yeah, that surprised me myself when I was doing it. I'm like, ooh, I had him, I think earlier in the year, I would have had him a lot higher. Again, like we're looking at that upside and we're looking at all of those different things. I probably just don't see Lindsay as someone who has a lot of like exceptional weapons to his game, which left me to sort of put him outside that top group of midfielders that we've spoken about a lot here, like your Finno Sullivan, your Sam Lawlers, your Levi Ashcrofts, all of that group. And then there's sort of another group that I see, which is Cooper Hines.
So you've got Cooper Hines above Xavier Lindsay?
Yep.
Wow. Unashamedly as well, the way you answered that, yeah.
Yeah. And again, we talked about it off the top with Smiley, where I think a player like Cooper Hines, who has just a few natural weapons in the fact that he's 190.
Yeah, clearance winner.
Yep. Clearance winner, a guy that can go forward and hit the scoreboard as well. So he's probably a little bit more versatile in that sense. I know Xavier Lindsay, you can roll him across halfback. He's a good user, but he's, 183 or something like that?
Yeah, low 180s, yeah.
Low 180s. I just sort of see him in that same bracket as Hines, Sam Marshall, Jesse Totoli, more of a small forward, but
Christian Moraes maybe.
That sort of group of players, and I couldn't separate them too much. I think he's had a better year than some of those guys, just attributal.
Yep. I'll allow you to talk, Nathan. I think you've spoken a lot about the year, about his footy IQ.
Yeah, well, that was my point. I still back that statement that he has the best footy IQ in the league. In the draft. But he's a player I think will do exactly the same role as what Harry Sheasel and Colby McKercher have done at North Melbourne. He will be the ideal player to have off half back. And we had this discussion before that a video that would be interesting to do is, but we, you know, it's not something to really explore, is which players are going to go to their club and instantly be in the top 15 players. Xavier Lindsay would be
one. And I agree with that. Yeah. I 100% agree. But if the two players you mentioned there, McKercher and Sheasel, I think they both have more weapons than Lindsay. Is that fair?
No, not greatly. I don't know that that is fair.
I'd say McKercher does.
Speed.
Yeah.
I don't think Sheasel should have ever been put off half back, and we see how damaging he can be when they put him in the forward line. But similar weapons.
So I'm gonna go to you, and you talked about the fact that Josh Smiley, it's easier for a big bodied mid to dominate at under 18s level. They just use their size and bullock around. He doesn't have that size, and he's still been able to bully opponents at under 18s level with the way he's able to ease his way in and out of traffic. I think his kicking efficiency is something that's really underrated. I think he's one of the best kicks in the draft. So when you talk about a weapon, I look at that and say that's his clear weapon. And off half back, which is where he's going to start his career, I think that's perfect. You need to have someone who can set the game up really well. He reads the game really well. He's got that footy smart. So he's going to make a perfect halfback wingman to start his career. And then he's got that nous to be able to go into the midfield later in his career to, really impact there. Does he have the weapons of someone like a Smiley or a Langford or a Lawler that we've talked about? No, probably not. But I've got him as the next best midfielder after that upper echelon for those reasons. And I think he'll actually end up going a little bit higher because the club's going to want that overall package that he possesses, that balance as well.
I agree on he'll go higher than 24 in the draft.
Yeah.
I actually think that I've got a club for him. But we'll
talk about that a little bit later. Christian Moraes, we'll just touch on very briefly. quick synopsis of his year and where you sort of see him sitting. He was at number 28 for me. He was at 30 for you. A great talent. Probably a solid year without being spectacular. Spoken about as a top 10 talent coming into the year. Maybe fallen a little bit, plateaued, but still has a lot of those weapons with the outside speed and scoreboard impact.
Yeah, for me, Moraes, like if you went and did a breakdown of all the things that he can do,
yeah,
like top five,
yeah,
I think he's got all the weapons that you would want to be an AFL footballer. This is going to sound a little bit harsh, but I think there's like a lack of physicality in his game.
Yeah, well, he struggled against senior bodies, yeah.
Yeah, and I think you can sort of notice that across the Coates Talent League as well. Like he's getting most of his touches using his weapon, which is running, and I think when he steps up to that level, I think that's a concern. I don't think it's a deal breaker. Like he can work on that sort of competitiveness, physicality, get his body better in a more professional environment, but it's... Like you said before, with the injury stuff, like it's a risk.
Yep.
One that I sort of couldn't look past to put him any higher.
I don't have too much to add on him. I do agree. His season has been good without being, you know, great. I still think the upside's there with him.
100%.
At least you can build things like physicality still. You've got that natural runner that can play on the outside or the inside as well. He's proven both. So I do think he's still got an exciting future. Just he's an interesting one in terms of where he's placed at the moment.
I think he's another one too, potentially. And I talk about that physicality, so this is going to sound counterintuitive to what I've said, but he's probably one that could start well in the AFL from the sense that if you stick him on a wing and he can use his running.
Could he be a Caleb Windsor type?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Certainly. Nathaniel Sulzberger is one we have to talk about. You both had him a little bit lower. I'd agree that his season probably wasn't what he wanted to produce. He was all the talk around Sandy in preseason, had this massive preseason. Obviously, the Tassie product who's come up and he's boarding at Melbourne Grammar. But for me, he's got a combination of speed and size that few players have and endurance as well. You saw at the combine, his 2K time trial was really strong. He runs out games really well. And his workaround stoppage at his absolute best is I won't say up there with the best in the draft, but it's certainly in the upper echelon. He was probably only able to produce it spasmodically and was one that was affected by having to play so much school footy. I think if we saw him for a full season, he would be one that would be viewed upon quite highly. And I think a club's going to take a risk on a player who's got all of those tools at his disposal because athletically, physicality, and also in terms of how it translates to AFL level, I think it's all there. So I had him at 34, but you both had him a bit lower.
Yeah, I don't see – maybe – you know some players you do just – you see everything you want to see and some players you don't. Like maybe he's just one of those for me. He's got that – natural size and running. So he's got he ticks two boxes there. You can put him in as a bit of a big bodied midfielder.
Yeah.
I don't sort of see him being able to kind of break through that wall when he's trying to break tackles. Like even at Coates Talent League level, I think he's too easy to tackle.
Okay. Yep.
So not being able to use that extra bit of physicality and size that he has. Do you know what his 20 meter sprint was at the combine?
No, not off the top of my head, but he does go sub three.
Does he?
Yeah.
That's impressive. I just haven't been able to distinguish him as a mid from any of those other guys that are, I don't know, your Damon Hollows, your Luca Gregor types in that back end of the draft.
And it is a midfield heavy draft. I think his marking's really good. I think that's a weapon I'd give him. And the only other thing I'd add is Marshall Reed and Ashcroft in the same midfield. He's probably not the protagonist he would be if he was out of Western Jets, where he would be able to really show those weapons. Nathan?
I'm not going to add anything. I'll keep moving because you two have summed it well. I want to move to two WA players now who in that kind of polarizing discussion of Malachi Champion and Cal Guerin. Now, I feel like there's a lot of mixed views on both. We've literally just had this discussion of why we see both. You know, I see Malachi. We'll start with Malachi. I see him. Where do I have him? I think I had him at 40.
Yeah,
I had him at 40. And I got to watch him at Waffle senior level, which I think is a great indication of how he's going to stack up at the senior level. And the criticism you two had was he doesn't push up high enough. You don't get to see enough of that impact. But he did at that level and he was able to absolutely burn his opponents off in transition. And that's just that sneaky element he has to him. I mean, he has only 8 or 9 touches, but he'll kick 3 goals. So you're having a player who scores 30% of the time they have the ball. So that's the type of player you're taking on. And he's crafty. He understands forward craft as a small forward, so you're not taking a risk with having to build that with him. I do think a WA club takes him naturally, but why do you guys not rate him as highly? What's the knockbacks on him?
Can I just say that I was a bit ashamed when I couldn't get him into the top 60 because I genuinely think he's an absolute baller. It's just that thing that you said off the top there where like he gets 7 or 8 touches in a game. I think that sort of small forward, that real goal sneak guy that's deep inside forward 50 is going out of the game a little bit. And you've got to be pushing up towards your at least 12 to 15 touches as a small forward. He's probably not the greatest pressure forward either.
Yeah.
So if you're not applying pressure, you're not getting, 15 to 20 or something like that with racking up the ball, then you've got to kick goals.
Yeah.
And he's had games where he's kicked 3 goals.
Yeah.
But is he going to do that at AFL level, come in and kick 2-3 goals every weekend?
Yeah, that's my concern with him. He's an exciting player and that's sort of about it. I talked earlier in the year about Archer Day-Weeks being an exciting player, and then he became a player of substance because he added that physicality and pressure to his game. But we've never seen that from Malachi Champion. He's just that exciting player who pops up, has those highlight reel moments. But then in terms of work rate, I also question, like you said, his pressure. And I think he floats in and out of games too often. So do you want a player like that who does that at waffle level? Yeah, he does it at senior level as an 18-year-old, and I'll give you that is impressive, but translating that to AFL level is a big question mark still for me, given, like you said, the accumulation's far lower than most.
I still think he's a higher end. Some of the guys I've got between, say, 55 and 60, I think he's got more, he's definitely got more upside.
Yeah.
So,
but he's a bigger risk.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I definitely think a team will take a risk on him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a specialised player in that role. So you know what you're taking on. Cal Guerin, the discussion here. I mean, he's been kind of talked about quite high around that 20-30. You had him 26?
28. I think.
I had him quite low. I think we both had him kind of low or not at all.
Yeah, I didn't have him.
My question with you, and people have said, his waffle Colts has been pretty impressive. I don't personally rate the Waffle Colts League as high as you do a talent league or a Sample 18. I think the standard drops off quite quickly. Your top players are dominating way too often. So obviously it counts for something, but his state champs were good, but I just think he's not one. I don't really know what you do with him at the next level outside that forward 50, and it feels like he went missing too often. He either has a massive game where he's kicking 4 and taking every mark, or he's just kind of floating around in this awkward position where he's not tall enough to really impact with his contested marking, and he's obviously too tall to be a real roving type. So why do you have him? It's more a question directed for you, Dill, because you have him higher. So what do you like about him in terms of the next level?
I take your points on the... It's hard to juggle the ruck and forward thing because he's probably not going to be a ruck, and he plays a lot more ruck than some of the other forwards. I just think as that power forward type, like I compare him probably another player in that same vein, probably like a Jonty Fall.
Yep.
I couldn't say when I lined those guys up, I couldn't say that Cale Guerin is less than Jonty Fall from a competitive point of view, from a sort of a focal point of view. He's got a few extra centimetres as well.
He's
pushing that 200. I love his competitiveness. And if you look at things like his agility, his ground level stuff, it actually stacks up really well against some of these other key forwards. And I don't know, I see him sort of coming into AFL level and he's got that sort of swagger and confidence about him that he could really, I don't know, become even like a bit of a cult hero.
Yep.
At a club, and I sort of see that. I know that's getting a bit intangible to actually put into a draft profile, but I don't know. There's something about the package that I like.
Yeah, and I'd concur with Nathan. And probably the marking side of things, and also I think he's just that awkward size where is he a ruck, is he a forward? He's more of a forward, but... Yeah, I'm just not sure that skill set translates as much as you, but I guess it's an agree to disagree sort of thing.
Were you guys impressed though with his national championships? Like you talked about the Waffle Colts.
Not I thought particularly, he was, no.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So I thought he was the best in that game against Vic Metro, he was the best tall on the ground.
It was the game against SA that I was most impressed with. I think that was the one he kicked.
Maybe that's the one
That was the one he kicked 4 in. I was impressed, but I don't think he did it. I think he probably needed one more performance like that in the champs to really win me over. I was still a bit on, okay, we'll keep an eye on this guy, but I think there's a few others doing a little more and a little more consistently. But
consistency was another one, yeah. As much as, like you said, the Waffle Coles form was quite strong. Jasper Elgar's the other main one that we've got to touch on. I had him at 48, and you guys both had him in your high 30s, 34, I think you had him. Dylan, my question mark on him and has been all year is how much he's going to actually impact at ground level. As a small forward, you need to be able to crumb, you need to be clean below your knees, and then you need to be able to snap goals. For me, too many of his goals were coming from marks. I compare him to someone like a Cody Waitman, who gets a lot of his goals from taking those big marks inside 50. And I think, yeah, if you're going to draft a small forward, you want someone who's got a bit more of a versatile skill set and a holistic skill set as that smaller player, rather than trying to be the main guy inside 50, trying to be the focal point, which he is. So I had him 48, and when I came to look at it, I actually thought that was on the higher end for me, but you both had him a fair bit higher.
Oh, I feel with Olga there's just so much to work with there. So I look at the I take your point on the ground level stuff. I don't think, if you go back to that game in against the Allies in the wet game one, that's a ground level game.
Yep.
And he was brilliant in that game, and he kicked a couple of running goals where he did pick up the ball. I think he's not as clinical. And there were a few times towards the back end of the season where I was watching him and I wanted him to, you know, get that ball. And there was a few just like nearly moments where he could have kicked four or five here.
Yeah, but there were a few of those games. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just find him so exciting. Someone that can, 182, something like that.
Yeah, if that, yeah.
Such a hybrid.
Yeah.
That sort of can play as a medium forward and a small forward.
Yeah.
I'll take your point on the clinicalness at ground level, like compared to someone like a Kakko who's just mopping everything up at ground level. But yeah, I do the PE thing and you're lining him up. Like, do you want to miss out on sort of a Luke Brewster type medium forward that does a bit of everything?
There's players I pick ahead of him. That sounds really harsh, but yeah, that would be.
The reason I like his game so much is I think the one thing that a lot of clubs struggle with at AFL level is marking inside 50. And you look at two players, him and Jesse Totoli, well, that's something they both specialise at.
Yeah.
Finding space inside 50, that's a luxury at the next level, I think. So I think you take a player like Jasper Elgar, you can kind of live with the fact that, okay, he might not be as clinical at ground level, but you've got a player that can open the, you know, if they know how to find the ball inside 50 and take uncontested marks, but he can do it contested as well.
Yep.
It's not just that. He's able to get up. So I think that's what I like about him. I think he does suit building the next generation of the game to advance, you know, inside 50 efficiency and things like that. So he works well to that type of game.
Just one thing I wanted to add on him was just how I was so impressed after the combine too.
Yeah.
Like, he went sub 3 second in the 20 meter.
Yeah.
And I think he went sub 6:25.
Yeah.
His
2K was quite strong. The last one we'll touch on, and then we're just going to run through some players who are really AFL ready. I've got Shanahan above Armstrong. Really quite an interesting debate in this draft class. I think Moore would have Armstrong above. It's quite a divisive topic, but I think more people would have Harry Armstrong above. But for me, the upside with Joe Shanahan is I think his athleticism is better than someone like a Harry Armstrong. I think he's cleaner at ground level than Harry Armstrong. He's been dominating in teams that don't get it in as cleanly as Harry Armstrong. So Harry Armstrong's had it delivered on a platter and he's been able to sort of take it out in front. Jobe Shanahan's had to take marks. His strength and body positioning, I back above Harry Armstrong. And I also think he's a higher ceiling player because he's someone who has been coached out at Moama. So, you know, the level of coaching out there isn't Matthew Lloyd, which is what Harry Armstrong's been brought up on. I still think Harry Armstrong becomes a very good player. Harry Armstrong could go above Jobe Shanahan because the St Kilda Football Club love the Sandy Dragons and there seems to be that thing that they're trying to build there. But for me, Jobe Shanahan has the highest upside of all the forwards in the draft class. Having said that, I still think Harry Armstrong is in the top two or three forwards.
I like some of your points there. I think the fact that he's playing with the Sandringham Dragons, I think that's a big one.
Yeah.
Because it's like they're so dominant, right? Like, and if in that forward line, pretty much any player that's played in that forward half of the ground has been able to score.
Yeah. Bailey McKenzie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you get a lot of space and just the way that they play. So I think that's a really good point. I wouldn't say Jobe's more athletic.
Yeah. That's interesting. I think the way he flies at the ball, I prefer.
So more of an in-game athleticism.
Yes, yep.
I see Harry Armstrong as two things, like a better contested mark and then a better field kick and shot at goal as well.
Yeah, I'd say he's a more reliable shot at goal. Yeah,
and if he does pick up the ball in that sort of 50 to 55 zone, there's a real chance that he could score from that, which I think is a pretty big weapon.
It is, yeah.
The one thing I did with Harry Armstrong where I probably marked him down, and this is not I'm sort of taking Job out of this now.
Yeah.
If you compare him to like other forwards, look a bit similar, like say an Aaron Cadman or even like a Jeremy Cameron in some sense, like Harry Armstrong doesn't get anywhere near as high up the field and get involved in the game.
Work rates are something I should have touched on. Yeah, I think Joe Shanahan gets right up.
Yeah, and I don't know how much that... Sometimes those things are difficult to quantify because you've got... Maybe that's just how the Sandringham Dragons and Vic Metro, where he played, that's sort of how they wanted to play and how they wanted to play him, just keeping him deep. And he did come back from injury.
Yeah, there was a little bit of injury, yeah.
My only thing I'll add, and the reason I'll back Job over Harry, Job kicked 11 goals in 4 games for Essendon's VFL, and I got to watch one of those games. He just slotted in, did his role that well. Again, pushed up. I like that ability. You know, that ability of Job to push up, and he's just got a little more bounce to him. I feel further up the ground. You're not, you know, when tall forwards go up, you're like, okay, they're going to be able. When the ball goes to ground, can they quickly pick themselves up and keep going? Job can do that, so that's what. That's what I love about.
I'll just say one more thing. Like I think with those two, like I still have them very close.
Yeah,
and I reckon it's going to come down a lot with them, just to like what team they get put in and how they're used.
Yeah, definitely.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, because they're sort of two different types of
forwards.
Forwards, yeah.
And just the one more thing I'll add. Yeah, I think that Job's competitiveness is unquestionably better than what Harry Armstrong's is. I don't think Harry Armstrong would have, at this point in his career, impacted at VFL the same way that Job Shanahan did. But we'll move to most AFL-ready players. We'll have a quick... We'll run through a few of those. I'll run through... So Leo Lombard, I think, slots into Gold Coast Round 1 team, and I think Levi Ashcroft does too. If he doesn't slot into Brisbane's Round 1 team, that's just because they're so strong and they've had an injury-free preseason.
That's the interesting thing. Yeah. Ashcroft's the most... I would say AFL ready, probably him and Jagger.
Yeah.
It's just that fact that does he actually get into the team?
Yeah.
I'd have Sam Marshall in this conversation too.
Yeah, so would I.
I doubt he gets into the team just on depth.
Yeah, of Brisbane's premiership winning team.
View for me, Xavier Lindsay gets straight in. Isaac Kakko at Essendon, I think he becomes top 15 straight away with impact away. Toby Trevallier for me as well, just to list a few.
Yeah.
Isaac Kakko is an interesting one too, bringing in that. How Essendon played this season was very much like a forward half team, and they were really profligate in front of goal. So they got a lot of entries in there.
Yep.
So Kakko will have to work in pretty tight spaces, I imagine. Yep. So he's going to have to bring that clinical nature to his game. Like we have seen him a bit, can be a little bit wayward at time, but he's certainly clean. So he'll work pretty well. Another one I had was Jesse Toole.
Yep.
Who if he, and this will come down to, actually, if he gets a game and that sort of thing, what team he gets drafted to. But I think he's that sort of player that just, you know, high footy IQ, really creative, can play well.
Tom Gross is another one for me, a really tough forward that he's going to have no problems slotting in and, putting his head over the footy. He's probably another one that's plateaued in conversations a little bit, but I still think his skill set's transferable straight away. Ollie Warburton's really clean off halfback and he can set the game up, I think, depending which team he ends up at. If he does get drafted, there's still a question mark over whether he gets drafted, but he could come in and impact straight away. And Sam Davidson from Richmond's VFL is an obvious one. He's obviously had that VFL senior experience. I think he is one that can impact early in his career.
All right, well, let's wrap it up there and tease, you know, because we need to give the audience something to look forward to in these future videos. So this is all for this podcast. In the videos coming out, we're going to profile each AFL club, the picks they have and the players we think they should take. So there'll be 18 separate videos that you'll see across both our channels. That'll be one of our videos. We're going to be looking at next year's draft. I guess how that affects pretty much this year as well and what that looks like and some other videos to make. So make sure you follow Dill, you follow us on YouTube and all the socials and get excited. It's a big time of the year, exciting time of the year. Thank you all for watching. Thank you, Dill, for the first video of many today, but hope you enjoyed. Make sure to go and subscribe to Dill and we will see you in some other videos.